Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thanks to everyone who supports Daily Tech News Show. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, August 3rd, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
From the home of 10 Cent Beer Night, I'm Len Peralta.
And very happy to joining us today, Rob Dunwood, co-host of the SMR podcast. Rob, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, folks.
Absolutely. Folks, if you don't know the SMR podcast, it is a very, very enjoyable way to spend a little podcast time talking about tech and many other things, hosted by Chris Ashley, who has been on the show before as well, and Rob Dunwood and Rod. What
Simmons, Rod Simmons.
I was going to say Simmons, and then I was like, is that right? I don't want to say it if it's wrong. And Rod Simmons, who we need to get back on the show as well. So go check that out. We'll tell you a little bit more about that in the show later on. We're going to talk about the new Windows Surface Go and the sort of mostly positive, the cautiously positive reviews that it's been getting. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Google Maps now shares your battery life when you share your location with a friend. Android police discovered hints of this feature in the Google Maps beta earlier this year, and it now seems to be widely available.
Blade, the French company, is expanding its Shadow cloud-based PC gaming service to 18 states in the eastern U.S. If you don't remember, Blade gives you $35 a month to get access the Shadow gaming PCs in the cloud. That means they claim you get low latency access from almost any device with an internet connection, tablet, phone, whatever. Blade is also launching an app called Shadow Beyond for Android and iOS so that you don't have to deal with the Windows operating system. If you just want to launch your game, let's say you just want to launch it in Steam, it'll make direct links in the app for you. That's pretty cool.
Huawei raised its forecast for 2018 smartphone shipments to 200 million and believes it can become the world's top shipper of smartphones by the end of next year. Huawei passed Apple to become number two, second to Samsung, this last quarter.
And the US FCC has approved the new rules that let companies access utility poles faster. This will make it faster not only to roll out new service, but also reduces the cost. The rules are called One Touch Make Ready, if that sounds familiar to you. It lets a company attach its wires to the poles without having to wait maybe sometimes months for another company to come move their wires out of the way. The rules might also help wireless carriers when they're out there upgrading their 5G equipment. They only apply to privately owned poles. So if the city owns the pole, the city gets to make the rules. But if it's a privately owned poles, they have to follow the FCC guidelines. In 30 states, there are 20 states who have opted out of the FCC program about this. So it doesn't apply to every poll everywhere. Also, it may not apply to a company just rolling out internet service. It applies to common carriers. That's telecommunications and TV. But the FCC just removed internet from common carrier status, meaning that if there were a company rolling out just internet, these poll rules wouldn't apply. Most companies that roll out internet are also rolling out phone service. So it won't crop up that often. All right, let's talk a little bit more about an interesting decision by Epic Games.
Big Friday news. Epic Games is making its Android version of Fortnite Battle Royale available from its website, notably not through the Google Play Store. Epic Games CEO Tim Sweeney told TechCrunch, quote, "We believe gamers will benefit from competition among software sources on Android." Of note, Google also keeps 30% of all those in-app purchases for games distributed through its store. The Android launch is planned for sometime this summer.
So, Rob, you're an Android user.
And I am an Android user.
You're a father of a Fortnite player.
A father of a master assassin, as she calls herself. So this is what I'll say about this story. I think it has nothing to do with anything that Epic said about the story. It has everything to do with we're going to get millions and millions and millions of people to download this the first week, and they don't care if it comes through the Play Store or through a through a web app, on our site. So why give Google 30%? I think this is the only decision that was necessary for them. Are we going to get more people in Android Play, 30% more, that it makes sense to go there? Or do we just do this on our own and keep that money in our pockets?
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And clearly, they went with option two.
I'll give Tim Sweeney some credit for being consistent about the open platform. He's made this same complaint about Windows as well. But yeah, it's got to be that's got to be the convincing argument right there, is keeping all that money. Now, the downside to this is you do have to change your settings to allow sideloading, which, you know, I'm sure most people in this audience are perfectly comfortable with, but that could open some unsuspecting users to trouble down the road if they get tricked into sideloading something malicious.
True. That's one of the reasons why you can't do this on the on iOS devices. But Google's gotten pretty good with it, to where it turns on just for the one download, and you have to go through the process of turning on the sideloading every time you download something, unless you actually really go deep into your settings and turn that feature off. Mm-hmm. So I'm not terribly concerned about that from, you know, a reputable site, because this is mostly people who just want to get the game, and they could really care less how they get it. They just want to get it.
Yeah, if you work hard enough to turn it off all the time, you probably either know what you are doing or deserve it. I don't know if you deserve
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
But yeah. A report in the journal NJP Digital Medicine describes a therapy for autism using Google Glass. Facial recognition notifies the wearer of the emotion it detects on the face in view. Now, this was a small study to just sort of prove the concept. So 12 of 14 children with autism in the study had a family that reported more eye contact after use of Google Glass. But this is just, like I said, an introductory study. There was no control group. So you're going to need to do another study with more participants and a control group if you really want to prove that this was an effect. But it's an interesting finding nonetheless. There have been other efforts similar to this. Engadget notes that a group at MIT had a similar proposal for using a watch to monitor audio and determine a speaker's emotional state by analyzing the pitch and the tone. A startup called Mightier has a gaming platform to help children regulate their emotions. That could be used for autistic children, but also for ADHD and other situations. And Samsung has an app to help children with autism improve communication skills. So all kinds of good uses for technology, maybe not to cure anything, but certainly to improve the quality of life.
Well, you know, I was making a point earlier this week, like Google Glass, you never see that anymore. And Tom was like, no, I mean, but it's very widely used in the enterprise. And this is one of those use cases where you're like, wow, that actually makes a lot of sense. However, especially when you're dealing with, if Google Glass is going to tell a person who's maybe not reading emotions the way that their peers are, you certainly hope the AI is giving you the right emotion.
Well, right. Yeah, that exactly right.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so I actually have a younger brother who is autistic. Mm. And the first thing I thought of was, you got to make sure this is right, because he does have, you know, trouble reading cues. So I want to make sure that if you're doing this is great, but don't have me thinking that he's going up to somebody who looks like they're happy and want a hug, and they're having the worst day ever. You need to get the cueing right in this. And you need to get that test group just to make sure it's actually doing.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think machine learning is good enough now that you can get a high enough percentage of this to be correct, that if you tune it right, it just won't respond if it's unsure. It'll only respond at a high enough confidence level. It shouldn't have that issue. Whether it's actually having an effect or not is still yet to be determined, but I think it's promising.
Let's move on to Google Maps, which is upsetting people, but not because they don't know where they're going. More than 63% of people who accessed a map or a smartphone or a tablet in May of this year used Google Maps versus 19.4% for Alibaba's Maps, 5.5% for Apple Maps. This is according to Comscore. Google Maps, runaway hit, right? Google says it creates its maps through lots of things: third-party data, public sources, satellites, and user feedback. However, the New York Times has a story that implies, at least in some cities, there's motivation behind some name changing of neighborhoods and sometimes unpopular ones. For example, in San Francisco, a neighborhood recently renamed the East Cut, I just have to laugh because I used to live there, is tied to a nonprofit group that paid $68,000 to a brand experience design company to rebrand the district. So there's some motivation there. One of the East Cut nonprofit's board members happens to be a Google employee. So some people are saying, why are we renaming our neighborhoods?
And that's just San Francisco. There was a person in Los Angeles who started jokingly referring to his house on a hill in Silver Lake, a neighborhood in Los Angeles, as Silver Lake Heights. And suddenly someone had submitted it to Google Maps, and now his neighborhood is called Silver Lake Heights. There was another map maker in New York who was just making a reference guide and had some typos and made some mistakes and used some reference materials that he no longer has. And suddenly that got used as source material for renaming neighborhoods. And he's like, well, that isn't the way it should work. There was a neighborhood in Detroit that is now called Fishcorn instead of Fiskhorn because of a typo in Google Maps. It's crazy how people look like, oh, it's a map. That is the name, even if there are decades of experience of calling it something else.
Well, and I mean, if going back to San Francisco, there was a neighborhood that was the Western Addition that became NOPA. And it was sort of a real estate thing because they were trying, it's all sort of smoke and mirrors. This is not new. I think what a lot of folks are crying foul on is so many people use Google Maps. If you're in an unfamiliar place and you don't know where you are and you see something called the East Cut, you're like, okay, that's where I am. And everyone who lives there is like, I've lived here for 50 years. What in the heck is that? You can't just rename my neighborhood.
Google probably needs to tighten up their requirements for rename and stuff. It shouldn't just be like open Wikipedia style. Just whatever somebody types last is what shows up.
Well, and I don't think that's the way it works. I mean, they do have community contributed content, but there are particular people that have to be vetted to be able to make these changes. But again, it's another example of crowdsourcing not being perfect, you know, not being 100%.
Right.
That's, you know, I used to work over in the East Cut.
Me too.
In San Francisco. And if
for the record, I think that's kind of a cool name, but I'm like, I've never heard that before. Like, what in the
heck? Sounds like a disease. Like,
terrible generic name.
No. All
right. I don't know. If I, up until today, if someone had asked me, where is the East Cut when I was in San Francisco, and I, you know, knowing I had lived there for 10 years, I'd be like, I have no idea. I don't know what that is.
That's not a real place.
Yeah.
Well, I think again, it's user feedback, you know, users, adding ideas is only one data point that Google says it uses. However, if there are, you know, agencies, nonprofit organizations and likewise that have a vested interest in calling something something and it, especially, you know, it gets into Google Maps, it, you know, it causes the rest of us to be like, well, is that really fair?
I don't want to say it's nefarious, but if you've got a Google employee actually on the board, that just doesn't look good. So
it's not a good look. No, you're absolutely right. And if that was the only example of this, I think it'd look even worse, but it is a symptom. It is a larger syndrome in multiple places. Do look for Sarah's neighborhood to be the feline district first.
I tried to rename Dog Patch Cat Patch. Like, I tried that for years. Never caught on.
Now you can probably get it done. Verizon announced it is the exclusive carrier for the $480 6-inch Moto Z3. Why do you care? Because it will become the first phone able to upgrade to 5G. That is sometime next year when the 5G Moto mod with the Qualcomm X50 modem comes out. This is one of those Moto devices that has the mod ability, so you can buy a thing. We don't know how much the mod's going to cost. Theoretically, this mod would work on other older Motorola devices as well, not just the Z3. But Verizon's promoting it around the Z3 and plans to have 5G service available in 4 U.S. cities by the end of the year. So up until now, the only products we knew that would be useful with that would be mobile hotspots. But now there'll be a phone, potentially.
I'm kind of just thinking 4 cities, a phone specifically to be used in one of those 4 cities. It might be a little early because I know most people only keep a phone 2 years on average, maybe 3 years. But it's going to be a minute before 5G is rolled out massively to where this would actually be a selling point. So this is just marketing fluff to me.
I mean, if you want a $480 Super AMOLED display, 4 gigabyte RAM, Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 phone, the Moto Z3 is a fine choice as an LTE phone. It's not the best. It's not the worst. And so, yeah, Verizon's trying to distinguish it from the pack of those mid-range phones by saying, but this one could be 5G someday. So, yeah, it's absolutely almost the best kind of marketing fluff because you are getting a decent phone at a decent price. You're not getting oversold. You have to make the decision to buy that module. Who knows how much that module is going to cost, though.
A new skill for Amazon's assistant, you know who she is, called Away Mode, attempts to make it seem like you're home by playing long audio tracks that sound like real conversations. There's a little bit of a twist, though. Away Mode will play one of 7 audio tracks penned by comedy writers. Saturday Night Live is one of them. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is the comedy troupe. The skill was created by Hippo Insurance, which, you know, sells home insurance, which says that the point of the skill is to turn the volume up and leave your apartment. And then you know that any potential burglar would be scared off, hopefully, by thinking that somebody is still at home and also is very insufferable.
So talk about marketing stunt, Rob.
Really?
So, Tom, you listened to a couple of these.
Yeah, I did. They are insufferable. and they're also... They sound horrible inside your house. They're real tinny. One of them just starts off with a bunch of background conversation, but I could imagine through a window, if you can't tell otherwise, like shades are closed and just, you know, you're hearing it through a wall, through a window from the outside. Maybe it sounds like there's people in there. They have a realistic tempo. But yes, the things they are saying are horrible. One of them is two average guys brainstorm what's unique about themselves so they can start a podcast about it. And that starts with one of them saying, have I told you how much I like ketchup?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm sold on this if it comes with the Home Alone adapter, so that not only does it sound like I'm having a dinner party, but it actually looks like one with silhouettes in the window. So.
You just need some kind of Philips Hue situation that puts the silhouettes up.
If they can make it culturally appropriate. So like a lot of places that get robbed are usually cased beforehand and not like, you know, months in advance, but maybe a couple of days. But if you're in a predominant neighborhood that's, say, like Chinese speaking, that might seem kind of weird and someone might be, it's probably just the TV on and they'll still poke their head in kind of thing. But
I see what you're saying. Like if it doesn't fit the neighborhood, it could be weird. But the cadence of this doesn't sound like television. That is one thing I'll give it. It definitely sounds like background conversation because you kind of have to listen hard to hear the jokes and to hear what they're saying.
Well, and depending on where you live, right? I mean, my apartment is several floors up, right? So if I took advantage of this and I was trying to keep away a burglar, it's like, I just want them to think people are talking. They don't really have to listen to what's going on. I have definitely put the TV on in the past just to be like, you know, some noise, some like, you know, some light stuff. But yeah, anybody who's casing the joint, as Roger said, would probably figure that out. But if they think real people are inside, it is it's a interesting use case for smart speakers.
I don't know how good this is at being effective. I also know that Hippo Insurance is doing this to get people to say their name. And they did a smart thing by hiring comedy writers because I fell for it and was like, okay, I want to hear what they say. I like the SNL folks. I like Always Sunny folks. Let me hear. And some of it is pretty funny. It's probably not the best. There is, in fact, TechCrunch mentions there's another skill for the Echo called Burglar Deterrent, which allows you to pick the different situations. So if the Echo is in the bathroom, you can pick bathroom sounds. Instead of a conversation, it's, you know, somebody brushing their teeth or you hear things being put on a counter. That seems like it would have a better chance. And again, to Roger's point, it would be less likely to be mistaken for a TV on in the background. If it sound like, oh, those are the sounds of somebody moving around in there. Don't you think?
I do.
Well, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to dailytechheadlines.com. Microsoft Surface Go is on sale. That is the 10-inch screen Surface tablet that you can buy a type cover for an extra $100 to $130. The tablet itself starts at $400. That's a little underpowered at 4 gigabytes of RAM and 64 gigabytes of slow eMMC storage. But for $550, you can get 8 gigabytes of RAM and 128 gigabytes of NVMe solid state. So you're talking about $550 for a Windows machine. You get a microphone, or a headset jack, a headphone jack, USB-C, micro SDXC card reader. Only 9 hours of battery life. But generally speaking, the reviews out there have been pretty positive. People like the build of it. They say, yes, the processor is slow, so you can do Photoshop, but just you can play Overwatch at the lowest possible setting, but it's really not going to be good for gaming. It also can't do a lot of tabs at once, but if you need it for just a few things, it's a pretty good price for a Windows-capable machine. Rob, what do you think about this?
So I'm actually strongly considering getting one of these for my wife. She's ready for a new laptop, but she likes them to be very small. And the most intensive thing that she may do is run an Excel spreadsheet with very few rows in it. I mean, she's really just using it to look at Facebook, to browse the web. So for the price, it's a little expensive for a lower middle range type laptop, but it's pretty. It looks really good. You know, it does. You don't sacrifice that lower end laptop design and feel you know, that you often get when you get those sub $500, $600 type machines.
Like an Asus or something. Yeah,
exactly. So it looks pretty nice. It's cute. I personally am not a Surface type person. I literally need a laptop that I can pick up by the keyboard and just walk around with it and do what I need to do. But for my wife, her laptop is just really a desktop replacement that when she wants to use it on a couch once every quarter, she can. It's going to sit on her desk and it probably won't move for months at a time. So for her, I think it actually is not a bad, device, because it really is pretty. I mean, it looks top grade. It looks really nice.
I've been using a Chromebook that Patreon Chris sent to us, and I'm surprised how many use cases it comes in useful for. So I'm looking at this thinking, okay, Chromebooks, well, around $300 for a good Chromebook. It can do almost the same things, but not all of them. So there is a Venn diagram where you just need the thing that you can carry around and surf the web and do some email on, but you also want to have full Windows occasionally. Maybe you occasionally need to use Photoshop, or maybe you need to run enterprise level Outlook. And it's just, the Android versions for the Chromebook just aren't quite up to snuff for what you need to do. I can see there's a slice of people that this is perfect for.
Machines like this, when you're, going through specs and being like, this is a nice machine, it's not top of the line for certain things, but it's a nice machine. It always comes down to, is the price point at the high end? Is it too low? I mean, it because that would be the reason that somebody would, you make compromises for a machine that you can afford and is doing what you need it to do. And of course, the tablet is a certain market of that. But is this too expensive for what they're giving you?
Rob, what do you think?
I was going to say it's right there on that borderline, because to get the one that's worth getting, you have to get the eight gigs of memory and the solid state drive. But once you throw in that smart cover for it, you're really into the price range of a fairly good quality medium range Microsoft laptop. And this is not that. It's kind of the low end of the medium range, the high end of the low range. So you really are, you're paying for the Microsoft logo and the fact that it looks really nice. It doesn't look like, the low-end laptop that you would pick up literally at Target or, at Walmart, because you can't get, PCs that, have similar specs to this at that type of, establishment. So it's a little expensive for what it is, but it does look really good.
I feel like it's the right price. In other words, it's not a bargain. So when I say the right price, I don't mean the best price. I mean, this is the price. This is the retail price it should be at. It's not a bargain, but it's not super expensive. And it's more capable than an iPad or a Galaxy Tab, but it isn't quite up to snuff with an actual higher powered Windows laptop. Remember, it's got the 1.6 gigahertz Pentium Gold processor in it. That's a Kaby Lake processor, 2 cores, 4 threads. It ain't powerful, but it's a step up from the Atom. So I think a lot of it has to do, if you're comparing it to a previous Microsoft Surface, it's great. Right. It's a better build and better specs. If you're comparing it to an actual, Lenovo or Asus laptop, it's a little bit apples and oranges. You're making some compromises, but for things, that make it easier, it's more portable at 10 inches than say a 13 inch laptop or something like that, but it's not going to be as powerful.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't decided yet. Ultimately she will make the determination on if she wants it or not, but I'm strongly considering it. And I have been fairly anti Surface, from the time that when they first came out, but they've been growing on me over the last probably 2 or 3 years. And this puts it into a price range to where, okay, yeah, I'm going to spend a little bit more for it, but it does say Microsoft on it and it is cute. So I think you're dead on. It's maybe the right price.
And Nick with a C in our chat room points out it. I shouldn't have said apples and oranges. I should have said Microsoft's and oranges.
Ah, yeah. Oh, Nick.
Thank you, Dan.
Worse. Also, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You help us choose our stories every day. Keep it coming. Submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. We are also on Facebook. Hang out with us there, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
And send us your emails to feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com, and maybe this will happen.
KV wrote in fact, and says, coming from an expat in the UK, so I guess I assume you came from the US to the UK, but I guess you could have been from a lot of places, regarding how MoviePass has challenged and disrupted the movie industry, which is something that we said on the show on Wednesday when we were talking to Scott Johnson. We've had cinema-backed membership plans, KV says, such as Cineworld Unlimited and Odeon Limitless, for around a decade or so at this point in the UK. I'm aware that Tom mentioned a similar scheme that AMC brought from Germany, but what factors prevented U.S. chains from adopting this model earlier? MoviePass felt like a weird, but technologically interesting anyway, hack to a problem that cinemas around the world have already addressed.
I mean, yes and no. The thing that MoviePass did was try to say, hey, it doesn't matter which theater you're at. You don't have to be loyal to Cineworld or Odeon. You can go to anyone you want, which I know for some people is not a consideration, but for some people it is. And MoviePass, don't forget, has been around in the U.S. since before 2013, I think 2011 or maybe even earlier. So I don't know the answer to your very good question, though, which is, why did this catch on with the theater chains in the U.S. Or catch on with the theater chains overseas? Why AMC has been doing it for 3 years in Europe. Although I wonder if maybe those European installations are responses to MoviePass in the U.S. as a way of testing it in a market where it wasn't competing with MoviePass to see how it would work.
Right. Yeah, where people are like, MoviePass, we've been doing this for years. The companies are like...
So, Rob, have you dipped your toes in the MoviePass? So
I have it, but if it would have been around, maybe in bigger, more well known when I was traveling a lot, I would have absolutely have been interested in it because, you know, I used to travel for work a lot, and there'd be times where my flight doesn't leave for 8 hours, but I'm done working, so I can just go grab a matinee or something like that before my flight, before I head to the airport. I don't know what movie center is going, you know, or what movie theater is going to be near me. So the fact that I could go to any movie theater, that absolutely would attract me to a service like this, because, you know, I am a movie buff and I like to see as many in the theater as I can. So, I think that, you know, if you could, you know, just have a situation where I can pick whatever movie I want to go see, wherever I want to go see it, it would attract me. Maybe not so much now because I'm not traveling like that anymore, but I did see an absolute use case for it when I was traveling a lot.
And it's worth checking out Cinemia, which is Cinemia. Although Waffleophagus in our Slack was pointing out, they keep changing their terms. It used to be you got a good deal, but you had to buy a year at once. Now they have a $20 initiation fee, which sort of means like, well, if I'm going to use this for 3 or 4 months, I guess it's worthwhile. So I don't know what's going on with them. But at least they are not having the troubles that MoviePass is having. Also, regarding the open RISC-V chip in India called Shakti, Mohan wrote in and wanted us to know that Shakti means strength in many Indian dialects.
So Roger, you have somebody to name soon. Maybe throw this into the...
Possibly. It would have to pass the wife test.
Right, of course. Yeah.
Because Shakti Chang.
Not to put you on the spot or anything. Shakti Chang, that sounds so good.
Sounds really good. It's worth considering. I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
Len Peralta has been illustrating throughout this episode. What have you come up with, Len?
Well, you know, I just want to say I really enjoyed the talk about the Surface Pro. I'm going to be in the market for buying a laptop pretty soon for my daughter for college. So that's always good information. But of course, I needed to go and draw the Alexa skill here, which I think is just absolutely ridiculous. Is it going to keep people from breaking into your house? I don't think so. But here the image is of an Echo being knocked over, beat up. He's saying, boy, I'm sure glad I'm in my living room right now. Sure is cozy in my living room. Yep, cozy and full of me.
Full of me.
Just in the meanwhile, in the background, some bad actor is taking all his stuff.
So. Yeah, in a classic big old sack over the shoulder move.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love that.
Much like the Hamburglar there.
He's yeah, really.
Spilling all the hamburgers.
So there you go, folks. The Echo Away skill will not prevent the Hamburglar from robbing.
Well, you best not try to keep it the Hamburglar out, because he's making it in. So
I mean, I can't guarantee this, but I bet if you bought this print and put it up in your house, that might reduce crime.
That is actually a really good thing. It's available right now at lenperaltastore.com. You can get the digital version, or, you know, for an extra little couple bucks, I'll sign it for you and send it out to you as a physical print. So go check it out, lenperaltastore.com.
Thank you so much, Len. And also thanks to Rob Dunwood for being with us this fine Friday. It's the first time that Rob and I have been on a show together. It's been such a pleasure. Let folks know where they can keep up with all of your work.
So I am one of the co-hosts of the SMR podcast. It is basically a tech-related show, usually, where we kind of talk about whatever we want to talk about. It's three guys. Like, we're all longtime friends. We talk about tech like guys would talk about football or basketball or whatever. So just head over to smrpodcast.com and you can see me there.
Now, what I love about SMR podcast is y'all be talking about, you know, your daughter running track or the workout program or grilling some tofu. And then the next thing you know, you're talking about like serious Windows Enterprise level stuff or Android hacks. And it's just great. It's a great rhythm. I love it.
It's unscripted. So we talk about whatever is really coming off the top of the dome. And then the chicken wings and beer episodes is even worse, where we might be talking about what kind of shoes we want to go buy. It's just all over the map. But our fans, that's what they say they like. They like it, yeah, when we keep it free. And, you know, there will be a Bama thrown here or Bama thrown there from time to time where we're insulting each other. But yeah, it's been fun. We've been doing the show for, I think, 9 years now.
That's part of the magic right there. This is the consistency. Go check it out, folks. smrpodcast.com. They are supported on Patreon just like us. Support us both. Go to patreon.com/DTNS to find out more about our selection and all of the perks that you might get. And don't forget, I'm heading out to St. Louis in the beginning of September for my 30th high school reunion in Greenville, Illinois. And I want to know if anyone knows of a location with a good broadband connection that I can host the DTNS show from in the St. Louis area on that Thursday and Friday, the first week of September. If you know, please send your suggestions to feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com.
Keep those emails coming. We love the feedback, whether it's about St. Louis or anything. We're also live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you can join us live, we would love to have you. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back on Monday with Lamar Wilson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.